We call it leisure jeans because it sounds nice. For me, it was about the thought saying we want to be, as Mudge Jeans, responsible for our products. We want to be responsible for the raw material. Let's get it back after use. Let's lease a pair of jeans.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
Many of you know that I've been in charge of a product as a service business for 5 years. And product as a service is special. That is why I decided to make an interview series about product as a service only. Welcome to PaaS Decoded. In PaaS Decoded, I will talk to 16 practitioners about their product as a service experience. We will have B2B and B2C examples. We will look at funding aspects, IT processes, and impact. I'm super happy to kick off PaaS Decoded with a Dutch role model of circularity and a front runner in subscriptions. Let's jump right into it. At an age of 23 years, after finishing his studies in business management, he started his career in textiles as product manager at Borneo Sumatra Trading Company in Taipei. He worked in textiles ever since, for example, by starting and leading a French textile company, which was licensed to produce Disney t-shirts and pyjamas. In 2012, he returned to the Netherlands and founded Mudge Jeans. The Mudge Jeans are made of up to 40% of post-consumer recycled denim, while the rest is organic cotton. And the goal for 2025 is to have collections with 100% of recycled denim. Mudge Jeans is a certified B Corp and has won multiple awards. His founder got awarded the King William I plaquette and was selected as the Circular Hero of the Year 2023 by the Dutch Ministry of Infrastructure Water Management. Welcome, Bert.
Thank you. What an intro.
What a life. Bert, what are you wearing today?
I'm wearing a linen shirt from EcoAlt. Mm-hmm. I like linen a lot. It's a nice natural material. And of course, a pair of light blue, but not bleached with potassium permanganate, but with ozone pair of jeans.
Nice. Couldn't be better.
And the shoes, I can't talk about, it's still leather shoes, so we don't mention them, right?
Okay. Yeah. You started Mudge Jeans in 2012 and started with the Lisa Jeans proposition already in the next year or early on. What was your motivation to offer Lisa Jeans?
The thing was that I started this company because I wanted to show that in the fashion industry, things could be done differently, because I've seen it all go wrong in my life, you know, from the list is long, but everything goes wrong. I don't want to mention it now, but you can imagine. So if you want to do something better, I think you start with production and start with all the raw materials and start to invest your time and study what's happening. So we want to make jeans at that time from organic cotton in factories where people are properly paid, are safe, are well insured, not too far away from home, no use of toxic materials, try to use less water. The list is long. You can on every little step of make a pair of jeans, you can do something better. And the techniques are there, which was a good surprise for me that manufacturers are actually really wanting to do something better. And there are a lot of innovations, a lot of new machinery, like lasering the jeans, washing them with ozone O3, reversed osmosis, water clearing, and all those kind of things. And again, you can read our sustainability report. We try to do it better every time. But then you come to a point where this is all possible as long as you pay for it, and as long as you think about it, and as long as you put yourself pressure on trying to do things better, which is all easy because that's just a decision. But then I found it also important, and that's something new, I think, at that time in 2012, to say we also are responsible for the product when you put it into the market and the afterlife. So at the end of life, the product, I think, is still of importance and also of responsibility of the maker of them. And that is not only in fashion, but I think in all industries should be like that.
Yeah.
And if you look at it positively, it can also be an advantage somewhere in the future when raw materials will start to become priceless, I hope, and that we will change, for instance, taxes. Instead of taxing labor, we should go start taxing raw materials. With that thought in mind, I said, then we should also have our jeans back after use. Mm-hmm. So that's where the idea came up. Okay, how do I get Patrick so far that he will send his jeans back to me after it's been 10 times repaired and it's really no use anymore? Send it back to me. So the first thing coming up is quite easy, a discount. So if you send back your old jeans, you get €10 discount. Mm-hmm. And I get your old jeans and I know they're made of organic cotton. We found out during our journey that cotton can be recycled, mm-hmm. if you comply to a lot of things. And one of them is, of course, to create a mono stream of material.
Yeah.
So that's where polyester and things like that fall off for us. We want to be mono material, or at least cellulose-based materials, natural fibers. So the one thing was, okay, we'll get our jeans back. You get a €10 discount, and that closes sort of the loop. Mm-hmm. But if you think even further, you also can think, and then I met people like from the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, and I got interested in thinking wider than only this. Why, as a company produces something, why don't you want to remain the owner of the raw material?
Yeah.
And of course, that's in fashion quite difficult, but for other industries should be easier. So we said, okay, let's lease a pair of jeans. We call it leasing jeans because it sounds nice. Mm-hmm. To be honest, it's not really leasing. You can have a total technical discussion about what leasing is and mm-hmm. what it's not, but that's not the importance. I think it's, for me, it was about the thought saying we want to be as much jeans responsible for our products. We want to be responsible for the raw material. Let's get it back after use. Let's lease a pair of jeans.
Okay, cool.
So to close the loop.
Close the loop, yeah.
Nice. So we're still the first and only closed-loop circular denim company in the world after 12 years.
It's a good,
I told myself it's a brilliant idea, but nobody else thinks so. And I can explain why to you later.
And the initial proposition started with the 10 euros discount if I send something in, or and how was the monthly fee? So how did it look like back then?
Well, we first said, we know what we are making. We make jeans of organic cotton with non-toxic indigo and things like that. So we want to have our own mud jeans back.
Yeah.
And if you start a company, well, the numbers are so small, it has no use to take 1,000 jeans back and start our whole recycling process. It's incredibly difficult because it's really a lot of stages. So we then said, okay, we accept jeans from other companies as long as they have 95% cotton in them.
Right.
So it feels like we're cleaning up the mess for other people also. And that grew, made us grow, and we had more jeans coming back to us. So we then contacted the factory we work with in Valencia, mm-hmm. with our first batch. We drove there ourselves because I wanted to see, you know, a lot of people are talking about circularity and I wanted to see, and with my team and with my own eyes, okay, what's happening? What are the different stages of recycling cotton?
Yeah.
Very complicated, right? Taking off the metal parts. The next one is chopping it into little bits. And then the next stage is tearing it apart so that you still have, it's with a drum and needles where you still have some fibers left, which mm-hmm. you can then, and then the story goes on until you mix it with organic cotton and make fibers again.
And did I understand that correctly, that the fact that you accepted jeans of other brands helped you also in growing your own customers?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's two things. First of all, volume, of course. We were too mm-hmm. small to only recycle our own jeans. And secondly, especially for men, they're very mm-hmm. connected to their brand. You know, people mm-hmm. Men wear their jeans, they know they have this size, this style, they like it very much, and maybe they have two colors, yeah. and that's what they do. So if you have to convince them to try a pair of wet jeans,
yeah,
you have to push a little bit and make them. So this helps, yes.
Mm-hmm.
For women, they shop a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
That's another story. Okay. But also the sales.
Okay, nice. Did your proposition change fundamentally compared to today?
Yes, it did. First of all, when we started Lisa Jeans, two things happened. The first thing was that the whole international press tumbled over to write about it, which was, of course, totally unexpected and great, because when you start something new, a brand nobody knows about, free publicity press is wonderful. That's something I really wish for. So it went up to the New York Walls, the Wall Street Journal, I don't know, everywhere. And the whole world talked about it. And I think because in the denim world, in the jeans world, everything had been invented. Mm-hmm. From stonewashing to the rivets and you name it. It's all been done already before. But nobody ever thought about leasing a pair of jeans. Mm-hmm. So that was spectacular. And the name, of course, I think Leisure Jeans is something that, mm-hmm. that sticks to somebody's mind. It raises questions. Mm-hmm. People go, Leisure Jeans, it's a strange thing. Although in all the years that I do it now, I've never met somebody saying, okay, you take back old jeans, you recycle them, you make new jeans out of them. Everybody likes this argument. Mm-hmm. But economically, it's a very difficult task. So that's mm-hmm. the first answer. And the second is, that I started to send out jeans, and you know, your first companies, your first customers are always your family, friends, and fools.
Yeah.
I had after 3 months, my family and my friends calling me say, "That's very nice. I leased a pair of jeans, but you don't take any money out of my account, so it's not going to last very long. This company of yours." And true, we didn't have it all covered to get payments in every month to do the automatic. There were no systems yet really for recurring payments in this fashion. For a magazine, have a monthly payment is easy, but this is something else. And it sounds easy, but it's not. And then the first thing I had, I said, okay, I don't want to push fast fashion. So I don't want you to say, oh, I have to send it back after 1 year because that's stupid. Mm-hmm. I cannot promise you to be able to read it, because that's what people also think. Oh, maybe I can choose another one after 1 week and send it back.
Yeah.
That's impossible because the logistics, shipping back and forth jeans is very expensive. And we know that also, because when you have a problem with sizes, people are very easy thinking about sending back and forth things by DHL. But honestly, it's very expensive to put it back in stock, to keep bookkeeping on that and everything. So I then invented the system saying, okay, you pay 12 months and on another 6 months. And it wasn't even too complicated to explain for myself. Mm-hmm. So that didn't work. And then we made it easier by saying, okay, it's a 12 times payment of 10 euro.
Yeah.
After that, you've paid. So I still get questions. People think, so 10 euros per month, if I keep it 10 years, it's a bit expensive for anything, but that's not the thing, it's 12 months. And if you want to send it back then and reuse it, then you can. But you can also keep it, which I prefer. And so we tried to simplify it, and then we did. And in the meantime, there have been software developers helping us and create this whole backside of the business, also enabling you to, you know, every 10 euro coming in, I have to, in my bookkeeping, connect it to Patrick and make sure that there's this payment. So in the end, the 12 months, because you get very annoyed customers when they, for instance, send back a pair of jeans after 2 weeks because it didn't fit or something, and you keep on charging that material. There's nothing more annoying for a customer than things like that.
To me, that sounds like at the beginning you had a kind of an unlimited time span. So, or was it already limited to 1 year, like it is right now, or was it?
It was 12 months, and I said, if you want to keep it, I don't even remember. You can do another 6 months, but it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay. And did you have in parallel also the normal sales, the one-time sales already?
Yes. We always did that.
Okay.
Now, the denim business, jeans business, is a volume-driven business.
Yeah.
I need to provide my manufacturers volume to be able to start the lines. And that's one of the most difficult things in our business, to get the volume going.
Okay.
Because if you order 500 pieces from a manufacturer of jeans, you know, he doesn't want to start his lines with it. Or if you order 10,000 meters at the factory who's recycling jeans and they want to make millions of meters, you know, and put on the machines and go. So it's hard to start our business.
Okay. And what I found, so first of all, over the last year, I found impressive that you constantly iterated on the Lisa jeans. At least that was my feeling looking at it, let's say, like 2 times per year. Price points changed, communication changed a bit. You had a starting fee at some point or a membership?
Yes, sure. Yeah, in the beginning, we had a starting fee. Yes, correct. Yeah.
Well, why did you introduce that one?
Because if you look at our financials, I have to buy a pair of jeans. Mm-hmm. I have to pay the buying price. I then have to put it in stock. You order it, I hope. So I have to do all the marketing and make sure mm-hmm. that you go to our website and all these things. Then I'll ship it to you. I have to pay the VAT of the end sum. Mm-hmm. I have to pay for the shipment. So my charges are €50 before we mm-hmm. start collecting money from you.
Right.
So financially, cash flow wise, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
That's why we started with a fee in the beginning to at least have something in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, we did it the same at Blue Movement. Also to see if there's money in the bank account. And
yeah, that I never worried about.
Yeah.
Because the people who are doing this are really fans.
Yeah.
They really want this to happen. Actually, there's three sorts of people. You've got people see really, they are the dark green customer, we call them. They say, this is such a nice idea. I want to be part of this movement.
Yeah.
Even if the jeans sometimes don't fit perfectly, they will say, it's a pair of my jeans. I want to wear this. It's a statement.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. But, you know, that's not the volume. Then secondly, you have, I hoped always to have the students who say, we do realize that something has to change in the world. We study sustainability or management. We want to have change in management, things like that. And they say, well, €10 per month, that's 2 beers. I should be able to. And instead of €120, that's, of course, interesting for them. And thirdly, we also found out that I had parents saying, we give our children a monthly budget for clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they learned at school about, because sometimes we are in the economic school study books, actually, at the moment. Or already sometime. And they come home and they say to their parents, I want to use that money to lease a pair of munchies. Which, of course, is great to hear. It gives us the energy to keep on going.
Yeah. And it sounds like that you're also at this point where you probably want to be changed the mindset of consumption.
We when you start a company, you want to talk about the mission of a company or the purpose. We are a purpose-driven company. We are in GmbH. We want to earn money, but not at all costs. And that's also why I like B Corp so much. The usual business is a force for good. It's very difficult, though. But anyhow, that was a major purpose-driven idea. And the mission is also to do this, to grow this business and to show that it's possible and let's do it. And secondly, also spread the word. So I do these podcasts now. For a long time, we have a monthly webinar where students can log in. And some of them, they do their thesis about circularity or fashion or you name it. Yeah. And they always find us. So I could give interviews every day, 3 times to fantastic students. Said, okay, let's combine it. Let's do one first Monday in a month at 3:00. You can subscribe to our webinar. We do give you some homework before you've done your homework. That's good. But we ask them to read the sustainability reports, the LCI, the life cycle assessments, our mission statement. And then, because I don't want to have questions saying, okay, how much recycled jeans do you put in your jeans? You can read that. And then the funny thing is that many times these students, they come in and they had all this homework. So you can sense them thinking, I have to ask a very intelligent question. So they've been working a week on this question from their studies. And I sometimes have to ask them to repeat it twice because I don't get the question. You know, very, very high level. But it's nice. It's nice.
Okay, cool.
So our mission is also to spread the word about circularity.
Okay. And I want to come back to the starting fee or a membership fee.
Yeah.
You said it makes sense from a cash flow perspective. I mean, it's necessary, so to say. But you don't have it right now. No. Don't you have cash flow issues anymore?
We do, yes. We want to make the customer experience as good as possible. Mm-hmm. That's why we took it off. And in the end, you know, we know we have a product as a service system. Mm-hmm. We call it not PaaS, but YaaS. Mm-hmm. Jeans as a service, but we talk to banks and financial institutions, and they also, for instance, ABN in Holland is really pushing circularity and this PaaS, and they said, okay, we are willing to finance this. We'll make a separate agreement with you that we can support you to do this product as a service system.
Right.
So we more or less together with the bank solved this problem.
Okay.
The bigger problem for us is that we have a hard time being profitable at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So we're hitting this zero line, and the last 2 years were very bad for us. We had a very negative result because of, you know, at COVID, everything went up. Our website was fantastic. People were thinking, people had time to read. They were sitting at home and not wearing suits, but joggings or jeans. Mm-hmm. So that was a good time for us. So we thought, you know, this line upwards of our web shop, which is about 40-50% of our turnover, is going to go through. But that sort of balanced down again after COVID and our shops opened again. Mm-hmm. The shops had a lot of, how to say, stock. Mm-hmm. So they didn't buy any jeans anymore. So yeah, the last 2 years, and we have all invested in the future, hired people for that. And when the turnover doesn't come, you have a big problem.
Mm-hmm. And so, what is... I mean, you mentioned it at the beginning also that there are reasons why you are, or Machines is the only one with Lisa Jeans. Is this what you mentioned right now, or is there something else?
No. That's because what we do, if I compare with my competitors, and it's the same with the deposit, if I take back jeans, first of all, you have to send them back. I'll pay for that. You know, if you send back your old jeans, the package is paid by us. That's 7 euros.
Yeah.
Then somebody at our logistic partner has to look at it and say, this can be repaired, we can put it in our second-hand collection and we'll sell it. Or it's not repairable, it goes into the batch that will go once per month to Spain for recycling. Mm-hmm. That's all cost that my competitors don't have. Mm-hmm. And then even the freight to Spain is we have to pay for it. Although I thought, you know, listen, we are sending you raw materials. Could you at least pay for the transport? They don't want to do it because they say we have enough jeans in Spain. But I want my jeans. I want closed loop circularity. So I'm quite stubborn. So all these costs are extras that no other jeans company has. Mm-hmm. That means that we should ask more, but we want to be competitive in the market. And I think it's already a big price, you know, 129 euro for a pair of jeans is not cheap. It has to be of perfect quality, perfect fit, perfect feeling, everything. Yeah. So that's the reason why it's so difficult. That means that you have less budget for marketing. You have less budget for good salaries to get the right people at the right position in your company. Mm-hmm. It all becomes difficult.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it feels like it comes down to what you said before, it's a question of how do we tax labor and how do we tax
exactly, yeah. Sure.
Oh, okay. But you
would, it's still ridiculous today. Any company, I would say that if we hire somebody, that I have to, that I'm taxed for that. It feels like sort of a penalty.
Yeah.
You create jobs for people, even nice jobs. People want to be part of this kind of thing, especially young people really like the idea of working for a company with a purpose and a bigger vision and a dot on the horizon to change something.
Yeah.
But you have to still pay them salaries and you have to create a pension for them. You have to insure them.
Yeah.
They have to travel. They have, you know, it's costly.
And I mean, you didn't comment on it, but I assume that at the end you recycle the material, you use it for your new pairs of jeans, but this is not substantially cheaper than virgin material.
No, that's a very good remark. I forgot to mention that. True. Using virgin is easy.
Yeah.
The fibers are long and clean and the machines will run and there's no hiccups.
Yeah.
When you use recycled content, there's always a little bit of contamination.
Yeah.
There's always a little bit of irregularities. Mm-hmm. The machines have to run quickly and if something breaks, a yarn or something, then machines stop. The shrinkage of the materials is also complicated. You don't often know exactly what's inside, so you have to. Every roll has a different shrinkage. So if you put out the rolls in the factory, you put on your patterns, you have to be really careful to take the right pattern for that material and see before washing a jean how it will look after washing. Mm-hmm. You know, it complicates everything. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. Just use virgin. That's better.
No.
And the cotton prices, of course, it's a commodity.
Yeah.
Also there, it's too cheap. Cotton is too cheap. If you would calculate everything, the water usage and the pesticides and the land going down and all that, and the lives of people that work in the fields and spray pesticides, then cotton should be 10 times more expensive if you would calculate everything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had one time 2 or 3 years ago when the cotton price was really going up, that we were feeling good because our price didn't change so much because nearly half of it is waste that we use. Mm-hmm. So that should happen, actually, that the cotton price will explode. That would be nice.
That should happen.
Yes.
And one, let's say, last question on the customer and proposition side of selling jeans versus leasing jeans. What differences do you see in the customers who decide to lease the jeans versus the customers who buy it?
That's what I just said. You know, you have the student who wants to pay only 10 euro monthly, or people that are really very motivated to find out how it feels. And I think proudly tell their friends, listen, I'm wearing a pair of jeans, but it's not mine. Yeah. I have to give it back afterwards. It also starts a discussion, I think, maybe in the pub.
Yeah.
I hope so. We've done a lot of research, but it's mostly the very motivated people that, you know, Motifaction, for instance? They name them, I think, the social, I don't know the words anymore, but, you know, they have different Motifactions, some people.
Clusters, But to me, that sounds like the lease jeans is actually for you just an instrument to close the loop. Yeah, you have to
take one of the instruments. Yes.
Yeah. And then spread the word.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there any, let's say, last thing you want to share for someone who wants to start leasing a product out?
A circular business?
Yeah.
Like the ones who are starting to make headphones now to be repairable and Fairphone. But it all starts, we call it, the Dutch government talks about the R letter. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, the 10 R's. Yeah.
There's many R's. And that's also a struggle for our company, because actually the first thing should be refuse. You know, don't buy so many clothes. So luckily it's happening, actually. People are buying now secondhand clothes. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's strange because we are talking about grow. We want to grow as a company. We want to sell more jeans, which is actually nearly a dirty word. But my explanation is that if you have this big cake of all the jeans sold in the world, 2 billion pieces of jeans are sold every year. If my piece of the cake grows, then I feel good, because then hopefully less bad jeans are made. So that's the thing. So the R letter, repair.
Yeah.
Well, if you are offering to me, if you're offering a circular model to your customer in any, let's say, any industry, I think you have to start by doing everything right. You can't. For instance, I got a remark after a few years from William McDonough, from he wrote the book Cradle to Cradle.
Yeah.
And he loved it because he had written about leasing jeans already 30 years ago. I thought I invented it, but it existed. In his mind, everything existed already. And he called me one day, I said, Bert, it's fantastic what you're doing. Yeah, that book. Baumgartner and William McDonough.
Yeah.
He said, but you're recycling toxic material. Your indigo that you're using is toxic. That's not a good idea. We don't want to recycle toxic material. So that taught me the lesson to say, okay, no, you first have to do everything right in the material.
Right.
And then, for instance, if you take Fairphone, that also wants to be a circular company and also wants to make a repairable phone and a phone that you can take apart and you can just change all the lens if you want, things like that. They also think about, where does the cobalt from our batteries comes from? Yeah. And is this mined in a proper way, or can we, or yeah. can we use recycled cobalt? Or so they, you have to go all the way, I'm afraid. So the task is much bigger than only leasing something out and do the whole technical financing of that and creating the product.
Yeah,
you have to make sure you can't do this, I think, with products that are made by slaves or children yeah. or with toxic material or things like that.
Yeah.
So the task is bigger than we all imagine. But companies are also reinventing themselves. I'm now, you mentioned the prize we won 2 years ago, the Koning Willemijn Plaquette.
Yeah.
If you win that one, they call it also the Oscars. It's really nice. It gives you a lot of attention and it's really something to be proud of. But also you are in the jury for the next one. So
uh-huh.
I've been jurying now hundreds of companies mm-hmm. and then we made a top 12 and now we have a top 3.
Mm-hmm.
And this Thursday, we will have this evening, tuxedo mm-hmm. evening again, launching the one who's taking over the prize after me. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is that there's also companies that I have never heard of.
Nice.
One of them is Mine, it's called Mine, M-Y-N-E. And this company is a huge company,
mm-hmm.
and they were shredding old metals. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. they reinvented themselves in saying, no, we want to go beyond that and make mm-hmm. sure that we can deliver companies that want to buy aluminum
mm-hmm.
or iron or zinc or copper, you name it. And mm-hmm. we have to start selecting everything instead of taking it as a rubbish and getting rid of it. We mm-hmm. now have actually, we have value in hand mm-hmm. if we select it better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 300 million plus company now teaming up with Volvo to make a car in 2030 of completely recycled metals, okay. which of course is great, I think.
Yeah,
I really like it. Yeah. And then if these things are happening,
yeah.
if Bosch would say, okay, as from now, all our yeah. electric engines would be made of metals that we got from a metal recycler.
Yeah.
But I understand, you know, it's more expensive, it's more difficult. You cannot really count on sometimes there's a lot of aluminum and the next day there's nothing.
Yeah.
So it's much more, you have to really wanting to do it.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, no one said it's easy, huh? And yeah. switching from the linear to the circular.
Sorry.
We have 3 more minutes and have 2 more questions, but we are already in that section. Do you see other, or what significant trends do you see for the next 5 years in the circular field or circular product as a service field?
Well, the good thing now is happening that we have a very important law came through in Brussels a month ago, I think, the CSDDD.
Yeah.
And also the CSRD.
Yeah.
So those laws are really going to, okay, still far away and still only for the big companies. And that's a pity that they narrowed it. But anyhow, it's happening. And
yeah.
I think, for instance, Holland, I think you have to have, or in Europe, you have to have 5% recycled post-consumer content in your clothing now
mm-hmm.
at a certain moment. So, you know, we need legislation also. We need you as a customer. We need us as brands to offer what's yeah. better. Yeah. But also, without legislation, we are not going to make it.
Yeah.
And does that answer your question? What was your question?
Yeah. What are the trends you see for the next years?
So that is a trend, that legislation is finally picking up the importance of this circular economy, because circularity is a great idea. Nobody is against it. It's not pointing with the green finger. It's not saying everything is bad and we have to stop. No, it's just saying, let's try to be smarter.
Yeah.
Let's try to reuse what we have.
Yeah.
Let's try to use renewable energy to make this. Let's stop using toxic material.
Yeah.
It doesn't make the world, as a consumer, worse. You know, we just have to start realizing that without this kind of economy, there's no future for a children. Yeah. You've read maybe also the Donut Economy then from Kate Raworth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Those kind of things. She says we are now still teaching our economic students economics of 50 years ago. Let's start at least teaching them something for the future.
The donut.
Yeah. The donut, yeah, for instance. Yeah. Yeah. And it's really necessary. And the good thing is, of course, then they mentioned mud jeans in their books, and that's all good.
Yeah, I mean, you're paving the way, leading the way. Last question from my side, as the podcast is about sharing knowledge and connecting people What kind of people should reach out to you? Who can support you? Who can help you?
We need volume. So our biggest difficulty is that we just are doing enough volume.
Okay.
We once had a cooperation with IKEA. And they came to us and they said, we want to be circular in 2030. You are circular. Can you help us? And we made this beautiful clip-on. Do you know the clip-on? For the clip-on count.
For the sofa.
Yeah, and it took us 3 years to get all the factories audited and to have all the reports of toxicity and you name it. And we did it. So we delivered now already, I think, more than 10,000 covers for IKEA. And they said, okay, you can bring your old jeans and you get a discount. And it was a success. They sold it very well. They sell it very well. We now deliver 9 countries. And at that moment, when we had to order our fabric, we suddenly could say to the Spanish supplier, we need 100,000 yards. The fabric becomes of higher quality, more efficiency, it's cheaper. So everything is right. So this is what I need. So I need bigger companies to call us and say, we want to make a product together. And it can be aprons, can be bags, can be jeans, can be you name it. Bosch could buy their workwear from us.
Yeah.
They would help us tremendously. And we would say, okay, after use, send it back to us. We'll take care of it. And you can write down in your sustainability report that you are making circular workwear, things like this. So I need help. Getting the volume going. I'm talking to Dutch supermarkets to do actions with us, maybe to have aprons that people can bring their old jeans, remake aprons out of it. And it's a beautiful piece. It has to be a beautiful product, first of all, with good explanation. But then, for instance, with IKEA, it's very hard because, you know, they will come after 3 or 4 years and say, you have to imagine that they sell covers of a clip-on for 39 euros. Max, that's shit from China, polyester, you don't want to know. They came to us and we said, okay, we cannot do it under 100. But finally, we made the calculation, the volume. We said, okay, 99 euro in the shop. And it was their all-time bestseller. The volume, but also the turnover, of course. So that means that even the clientele of IKEA, if you propose them a beautiful item with a good story, they're willing to pay. Again, that proves to me, come on, guys. But now the buyer, so there's a big stream in IKEA said we want to be circular. But they forgot to tell the buyers. So internally in IKEA, the buyers say, no, if we can sell it for 79 euros, we can do 10 times more of the volume. So they started arguing with us, it has to be cheaper. And I said, it's open calculation. You can see everything, the uses of the material, the sewing, price, the minutes, the washing, the shipments, everything is open calculation and a small profit for us. So they're now pushing us to make it cheaper. Then we said, okay, now it's 40% waste. And the buyers go like, but if we use only 20% waste, that's cheaper. And then in the end, the question was from the buyers, if we make it in Pakistan with 100% virgin material, it's cheaper. I said, yeah, that's cheaper.
It's a different product. It's a product from the past.
Yeah, but it looks the same. It looks the same.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bit sad. So I need big companies to team up with us. We've proven with IKEA that we can do anything.
Yeah.
You can even get audited. You can go. Everything is transparent.
Yeah.
There's no secrets. And you, as a large company, you can help us move forward. And secondly, you can help yourself by complying with all the questions you are going to get with the European law.
Yeah.
So please spread the word for me, Patrick. Yeah.
I have two people in mind. So after I hit the stop button, I will tell you. So
thank you.
Yeah. Great, Brad. Thanks a lot. Amazing journey. I mean, impossible to put in 45 minutes.
Yeah, no, but, I can keep on talking for hours without will not bother your listeners with this.
No, awesome. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you for the interview.
This was the first episode of PaaS Decoded. 16 conversations about the fine details of product as a service. If you liked it, share this episode with colleagues or on social media. If you missed a question or topic, please send me an email so I can improve the conversations for you. If you learned something from this episode, please provide a review via Spotify or Apple Podcasts. That helps others to discover the podcast. And don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.